Okay, we are at the Hidden Villa in the Los Altos Hills.
This is California Burning, a co-production of North State Public Radio, made possible by generous funding from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. My name is Matt Fidler. This is the fourth episode of a five-part series exploring the wildfire problem we're having in California, although the lessons go well beyond the state. The first three episodes of the series were focused on the management of our fire-prone forests and wild spaces. And that problem is real, as we addressed. But another part of this problem is that these fires are increasingly encroaching on our towns and our cities at a place that we call the wildland-urban interface, where our wild spaces meet our communities. And when a fire happens here, in the wildland-urban interface, the actual fire is only one part of the disaster. Take the Thomas Fire as an example. The Thomas Fire was a complex of fires on the coast of Southern California, around the cities of Santa Barbara and Ventura.
In Ventura County, the massive Thomas Fire showing no signs of slowing, fueled by those fierce Santa Ana winds.
It ultimately burned over 280,000 acres, destroying over 1,000 buildings, killing one firefighter and one civilian. Not a small ordeal. But the ordeal became even bigger when the big rains came through.
Everybody's thinking, great, now we're getting rains. It's going to help with the fire, because it was still burning in the backcountry, but it was not going anywhere, you know, around the houses. And now everybody's thinking, we need rain.
This is Karen Thompson.
But we didn't need an intense storm that would also cause a reservoir to go. And it was because of the Thomas Fire, the debris flow happened.
A debris flow is an epic avalanche of land that can be caused when badly burnt hillsides get extremely wet extremely fast. But these debris flows that they're talking about were caused by more than just a big rainstorm hitting burnt soil.
There was a lightning strike, and it hit a transformer at the Montecito Reservoir.
Yeah.
And it released all the water from the reservoir on top of all the water that was coming down with the rain.
This is Karen's husband, Mark.
People have no idea how extremely large and powerful that debris flow was.
It's like a snowball effect when that much force hits a downward slope like the Santa Barbara Hills. It loosens soil, removing vegetation, which further destabilizes it and basically liquefies the slope. The debris flow caused over $200 million worth of damage, taking out entire homes and cars, hospitalizing 163 people, and killing 23.
I've seen the destruction in person of what it did. You just can't fathom it until you see how awful it is.
The boulders were...
There were boulders the size of half a house.
Yeah, my friend actually lost her husband and son in that debris flow, and they never found her son. It took their whole house off the foundation, and it was like a 2,500 square foot home.
It looked like somebody came through with a couple of giant earth movers and just pushed the homes away. And
the trees, the houses, everything.
Oh yeah, trees just disappeared like they weren't even there. There was nothing that could withstand the strength of this mud flow, you know, with all the boulders. And
yeah, it was horrible.
These hyper-intense catastrophic fires like the Thomas Fire or Carr Fire or the Camp Fire, they often aren't under control until the rains come. It was the same way with the Tubbs Fire in 2017. The Tubbs Fire was the one that burnt through the suburban city of Santa Rosa in Sonoma County, which is just north of the San Francisco Bay Area. The entire complex of fires burnt in three counties, and included in that destruction, 5,643 structures were destroyed, 5% of the housing stock, $1.2 billion in damage. At the time, it was California's most destructive fire ever, more than both the Oakland Hills Fire of 1991 and the 1906 San Francisco Fire that followed the earthquake. I reached out to some colleagues at KRCB Public Radio in Santa Rosa who covered the Tubbs fire. Steve Mencher is the news director and Adia White is the assistant news director.
CAL FIRE investigators found that the Tubbs fire started on privately owned property on private electrical equipment near Bennett Lane, just outside of the town called Calistoga, which is about 18 miles driving from Santa Rosa.
The night before the fire started, those of us from this area were hearing kind of eerie sounds. It was, you know, we had been having red flag warnings all summer, but we start to hear these kind of whistling, eerie sounds, and it turns out that this was the winds that were picking up all over the area, and these were the winds, essentially, that added to the catastrophe.
There was a lot of unusual weather that night. First of all, these winds were over 50 miles per hour in some cases, and typically in Santa Rosa, you'll get a lot of wind blowing towards the east, but this was actually wind blowing southwest, which is rather unusual. So instead, you have a fire that starts in the hills would blow directly towards the city of Santa Rosa. And that's why it ended up in the city limits so quickly, as opposed to other high-risk fire times, those fires might blow up towards the hills instead of towards the city.
I don't think of Santa Rosa as being this wooded area. It seems like it's more like a suburb of San Francisco than kind of a rural area. Why did Santa Rosa burn like it did?
Santa Rosa actually is very rural. Sonoma County is pretty rural. We're the largest city in Sonoma County. We have about 200,000 people, somewhere around that. We're nestled in a valley. There's a lot of grassy hills around us, oak woodlands, manzanita. So there's actually a lot of foliage to burn. And just outside of the city limits, there's a lot of high-risk fire areas designated by CAL FIRE. So you'd be surprised by how many fires we do get out here in the hills. And another reason that the fire got into the city itself is that these embers actually can blow up to a mile away from the ignition point. So you might think that you have to be near the woods for the house to catch fire, but even if you're a mile from an area that's burning, you can still have one single ember can catch a house on fire. So you have to think about how quickly these embers can travel, especially during a night when winds are up to 50 miles per hour. That's a lot of hot material blowing directly onto houses. And that's a lot of the reason why the Coffee Park neighborhood caught on fire so quickly, because even though they're about 5 miles from the area that's designated as a high-risk fire zone, because there was so many embers blowing down towards the city, a lot of those houses caught as soon as a single ember hit the roof, which might have had, you know, foliage on top or any sort of debris on the roof will catch fire very quickly.
We'll return to Adia and Steve a little bit later. Just 13 months after that record-breaking fire in Santa Rosa, the Camp Fire erupts in Butte County and burns 90% of the homes in Paradise, depleting over 10% of the entire county's housing stock. The official death toll is 86 people, but with the number of folks in Paradise that were living off the grid, isolated socially and geographically, the real numbers could actually be a lot higher. In the early days of the Camp Fire, I lived in smoke, going days without seeing the sun. I did talk to some fire refugees living in the Walmart parking lot and heard some horrific stories from first and second responders. My wife, my dog, and I eventually sought refuge ourselves in the Bay Area where we were to have Thanksgiving with my family. The day before Thanksgiving, the rains finally came, helping get the fire under control. People could now stop panicking and could start assessing the damage. I returned to Chico after Thanksgiving in time to attend a special summit of local fire safe councils, attended by community and business leaders, politicians, firefighters, and fire specialists. The meeting had a somber but grateful feel to it. Everyone was thankful that they were alive, and you could feel the urgency in the room, but also shock and horror and just sadness. Over half the people there had just experienced a traumatic event, just trying to escape the fire with their lives. They lost their homes, loved ones, pets, horses, and priceless family heirlooms. And all of us lost this forested community that we once knew and loved. But everyone came together at this meeting to share their knowledge and to help each other out so we could move forward.
Well, welcome to our 12th annual summit and our campfire regrouping experience. We're so thankful to be able to see everyone. I'm Callie Jane.
Kelly Jane DeAnda is the executive director of the Butte County Fire Safe Council. A Fire Safe Council is a nonprofit neighborhood organization that helps fire-prone communities keep safe. We're going to take a trip with Kelly Jane to see some of the work they're doing and how it helps keep neighborhoods safe from fire in just a bit. But first, I wanted to air some of the things that I learned at this Fire Safe Council summit.
And I think that's why we're here today, is to help you understand what a Fire Safe Council can do for you, especially on the side of prevention. When you travel around through burned areas, such as going through Concow or Yankee Hill, not everybody was saved because they did everything right, but several were. You know, if you have the clearance, you have the right type of venting, you have the right type of maintenance, and you're prepared, you have a much better chance of survival.
It's all about education of how to keep your home fire resistant and to organize prevention efforts and fire recovery efforts in your neighborhood. At this meeting were many community leaders, fire experts, firefighters, and local Fire Safe Council leaders from various communities in and around Paradise. This includes Jim Brashears from the Town of Paradise's Emergency Operations Center.
This is going to be, over time, about a lot of lessons learned, a lot of opportunities to make a better future for a lot of people, not just us, but other people across the state and across the nation. I truly believe that we can make a difference out of this horrible event that occurred to us on November 8th and beyond. So I saw this fire unfold from the ground level. One of the things it reinforced to me was the message that Jack Cohen told us a long time ago, and look up Jack Cohen on the internet and you'll see preventing home ignitions and you'll see how homes can survive a wildland fire. You'll see that he keep this in your head. Fires burn from ignition to ignition. This fire burned thousands of ignitions. And those ignitions had to have points to ignite. And when we look back on this, I think we'll see that Jack Cohen's message is just as valid today as it was 20 years ago, and that we need to learn from those lessons and carry them forward so that not only Paradise, when it's rebuilt, will never have this happen again, but other communities across the state and the nation can also benefit from the same experience we've had.
Fires travel from ignition to ignition. Otherwise, it just burns out. In the Paradise, Ventura, and Santa Rosa fires, the fires made it to the neighborhoods through wild spaces, burning trees, leafy debris, and brush. But a fire turns deadly when it burns houses, basically made of dead trees. And when they're spaced closely together, now you have a perfect recipe for a neighborhood fire that burns from home to home. This Fire Safe Council Summit was the first time that I met Zeke Lundar. He was in the last episode, available at californiaburning.net, but Zeke was here at this Fire Safe Council Summit to express his concerns.
At the landscape scale, Concow and Paradise and Bloomer Hill and Cherokee, they have some of the most extreme fire weather in the entire country. But what it's brought up for me being out there is the access is terrible. Everyone's got a wire fence. There's gullies from the creeks. You just can't get in there. And if we're going to manage fuels on any sort of meaningful scale to avoid killing people the next time we have the fire, which we will, we can't rebuild Paradise on the same footprint. And if you look at this picture, just count how many one-way streets there are. You couldn't design a better urban layout to kill people and trap them.
This fire was more than just another California wildfire. It was a tipping point in how we live in this state. And what's that cliche? The definition of crazy is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. There are hundreds of communities in these fire-prone areas around California that could have the exact same thing happen to them that happened in Paradise, or Santa Barbara, or Santa Rosa. Unless these communities get ahead of the problem and take measures to mitigate the potential catastrophe, these fires will happen, causing other disasters and floods and landslides, killing more people, polluting our air and water and soil, and the cycle of catastrophic wildfires will continue. You're listening to California Burning. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, We're going to join Callie Jane and one of her colleagues at the Butte Fire Safe Council as they work on a project to maintain the forests around Magalia, right above Paradise.
We can see this area did burn fairly heavily. Again, there was not enough space between the trees to slow that down, and it ran into that area.
Stay with us.